Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, welcome back to The Here and Now. This is the podcast looking at the crossover between the music industry and various socio-political themes and issues. I'm your host, Liv Cowell, and if you joined me last time on the podcast, you'll remember that we looked at mental health in the music industry, specifically regarding the impact that an entire year of national lockdowns has had on freelance musicians. So in this sixth and final episode of the series, I want to keep going along that theme and explore money in the industry. Now I know, covering all the financial troubles of the entire music industry in just shy of half an hour is, well, some would say unrealistic. So I'll keep things fairly specific. We're going to look at the live sector this episode and the financial disaster that's come about for hundreds of independent music venues across the UK thanks to a little thing called the pandemic. My guest this episode is someone who works right at the heart of the live music scene here in the UK. Luke Hinton works as a music promoter and is also the regional coordinator for Music Venue Trust. I'll explain what they do in a moment. Just know that Luke has a lot to say about the problem at hand.
They are hubs. They're places where people meet. They're places where bands form. They're places where people fall in love, whether it be with their band or, I say, it could be their future partner. If you lose these places, you lose a lot.
You'll hear from Luke shortly, but first let me give you a quick rundown of what exactly is going on for grassroots venues as it stands. I don't know about you, but this past year has been a painful separation from live music for me. I was very lucky to attend gigs quite frequently in all different venues, from arenas to converted churches, and I can't wait to get back to that feeling again as soon as it's safe enough. But while gigs are a luxury for many of us, for others, losing them has been more than just a little bit disappointing. It's important to remember that for all the creativity and passion that goes into the music that we know and love, that goes into these shows and festivals that we cannot wait to get back to, the music industry is a business just like any other, and it's a big one. It contributes roughly £5.2 billion to the UK economy each year, pre-COVID, obviously. But if the last year has shown anything, music is undervalued as a creative sector. It's seen, like I said, as a luxury rather than a necessity. You may remember the government telling those within the arts to retrain amidst the pandemic, which, you know, pretty much says it all, really. And although funding has been delegated to much of the infrastructure within the music industry, places like music venues, it's not really been enough. It's, you know, kind of a situation of too little too late. Music Venue Trust is a registered charity which works to protect the hundreds of grassroots music venues across the UK. These venues are vital to the UK music scene, providing a platform for up-and-comers and a community hub as well for local music fans. So losing them would be absolutely devastating, but it's become a very real and very frightening possibility in the last 12 months. As it stands, Music Venue Trust has announced that 20 of these independent venues across the UK are currently facing permanent closure if they do not receive immediate support. As with any business closing, this has a knock-on effect. For any venue unable to reopen its doors, there are hundreds, maybe even thousands of sound technicians, crew members, venue bookers, managers, bartenders. All these people that work for these sites will be out of work. The local businesses that the venues support as well, like local breweries or grocers, they would also feel the hit. And I think that this interconnected nature of businesses within the music industry is something that's just been forgotten amid the general population before now. And so that's where this episode is going to be focused. And to join me in this discussion is music promoter Luke Hinton. In 2007, Luke founded Juicebox Live, an award-winning live music bookings and promotion company. And in 2016 and 2018, he was awarded Best Independent Music Promoter in the UK for his work with independent venues. He's also regional coordinator for Music Venue Trust, as I mentioned, and he's got so much to say on the hardships facing these sites. Without any further delay then, I'm so excited to welcome Luke Hinton onto the Here and Now. Well then, Luke, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Here and Now. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. I'm glad that you could join us today. Obviously, you're somebody who works right at the heart of the music industry's live sector. So what can you tell us about the financial impact the past year has had on independent venues in particular?
It's obviously been a very, very strange time for everyone involved. Obviously, there's been, well, next to no income at all for the last 12 months for most venues due to the pandemic. And if we was to go back probably 12 months, it was a real worry because not knowing when the next gigs were going to be was obviously a huge issue to a lot of venues. There has been some, obviously, financial support that has come in from the Arts Council and the government, which has made, I'd say, life easier, and is probably not the wrong, probably not the right phrase to use in terms of easier, but it's perhaps made it less stressful at times, knowing that there's the financial support which covers the cost of paying bills and the venue staff, obviously, keeping them in their jobs. But yeah, it's obviously had a massive impact across the whole network, and from artists and obviously freelance staff not being able to earn in that time.
Yeah, and obviously the support that's been given has been great and very well received, but it hasn't done enough for everybody. I mean, Music Venue Trust announced recently that 20 independent venues all across the country are still at very high risk of permanently closing following the events of the last year. So what would happen if the support wasn't there, or the support they were getting wasn't enough in the end, and we ended up losing these grassroots venues? What would be the ripple effects on the music industry as a whole?
Yeah, obviously, the as greatly received as the support was for obviously a large percentage of the sort of network, there were some which did slip through the gaps, and obviously that has meant that the campaigning from Music Venue Trust hasn't stopped, because obviously the plan has always been to reopen every venue safely and get venues back to the point of being able to do it. And obviously every venue has its own uniqueness, and it is something that they're key to their community. So whether it's in the heart of a city centre or a rural venue or whatever it may be, and whatever genre that it supports, they are hubs. They're places where people meet, they're places where bands form, places where people fall in love, whether it be with their band or, I say, it could be their future partner. Yeah. It is something that if you lose these places, you lose a lot. They don't tend to be stereotypical in terms of any sense. You go to every single venue and it differs, and there'll be little quirky things, and that identikit thing that exists in a city centre chain pub, these places don't have, and it's what people love about them. And I think the general campaign that Music Venue Trust has run and various other organisations about sort of saving venues has shown the love for these places, and it has been that there's been huge amounts of money raised, which has been, I say, really important to getting venues safer, in a sense of being able to recover. But it is something that if you don't have these places, where are the artists going to play in their first shows, and where are people going to meet like-minded people as well? So that's, I think it's vital that we do try and save all of these places.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it feeds into that kind of local mindset as well. A lot of the past year has brought up about shopping locally and supporting local businesses and stuff like that, and that feeds into the music industry as well, doesn't it? Because many of these independent places will maybe stock local beer or stock local craft or whatever, you know. It's such a big part of the community, like you say. Do you think that we would be at risk of losing that as well, the kind of connectivity?
Yeah, well, I think it is something, again, you do see that a lot of the venues there'll be a lot of independents involved, and independent venues will tend to support independent businesses as well, and I say with artists and local artists that your Glastonbury or Reading headliners tend to have started out in a grassroots venue. So it is that thing of the locality side of it is key, and the venues that I work within, I know that we use the local butchers for the meat for the burgers and things like that, and there'll be a local beer on tap and all of that, and it is something. It's about the community. It is a community feel, and that's why I think again the love has been shown is that it means something to people locally. Having a national campaign is brilliant to raise the whole awareness, but I know that when I've seen donations and the support messages, it's from the people who use the venue. It's not coming from someone from South America or even 100 miles away. It is posts from people saying that place means something to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a music promoter, I'm sure that you've seen firsthand how dramatically things shifted for those working behind the scenes as well as those people playing the stage. But that being said, there doesn't seem to have been as much focus on the crew members, the bookers, the managers, everyone who's involved in bringing a concert to life that have also suffered through the pandemic, even though, unlike most musicians, their work is almost entirely centred around live music, around bringing something to the stage. And so with the exception of charities like Crew Nation, what do you make of the support that's been offered to the people working behind the scenes, and what has your experience been over the last 12 months?
I think that a lot of the support in terms of the financial aspect has been focused on the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And there have been obviously vast numbers of people who have missed out and in support just because of the nature of how they work. So I know a lot of the crew in the venues that I work within will be freelance, but they may spend time on the road with bands or various other aspects, or have day jobs that make up half of their money. So suddenly they've lost a vast sort of amount of income. I know that some venues have looked to support their in-house crew with the funding they've received, but others haven't been able to offer that. And I think it's been terrible how many people have obviously not been able to get the support that they need. A lot of people have changed their work pattern and started looking and doing other things. I say on a personal aspect, I've lost two members of my regular sound crew because they had to take up other work, and they've ended up in higher paid jobs. And they've said actually they're not necessarily going to return to regular work within the venue network. They'll do it when they have time alongside their other job. Personally, I've been very fortunate because I work within a venue setup. So as well as promoting events, I've had something that my income and a lot of my regular team have been supported that way. But again, I know that there are hundreds and thousands who haven't had that support. The infrastructure being there is something that at least people will be able to return to work at some point, but the key it's not having been able to obviously earn in the meantime, is that if people have decided a change of career path is their best sort of steps.
It's necessary, yeah, because it's just been so hard, people fighting with what they love and what they believe in versus, you know, having to pay the bills, having to pay rent and stuff, and yeah, having all their income stripped away, especially because so much of, I know, musicians' income, so much of that comes from touring and from playing live. But you think of people that are freelance and working backstage, like you say, I think it's really telling how the government have reacted to this. I mean, we know for a fact that the creative sectors have been really hard hit, and that there's been such a strange kind of viewpoint from the people that are high up that could be willing to help, because there was this whole controversy about telling artists to retrain, telling dancers to look into computing jobs and things like that. So, but fundamentally, it's a business. The music industry is a business. Everything that goes into it is a business. Why do you think people just glaze over the essential business points of that?
I think it's something that it's a lack of understanding. I think that I think my experience may well be that the decisions being made haven't been focused on things like the live music sector as a whole. Even the guidance that's come out about performing arts, which the venues and promoters have had to follow when doing things like socially distanced gigs, is very aimed at theatrical productions, opposed to a gig. And I think it is something that although there has been obviously a lack of understanding from the government on what is involved, I think a lot of the campaigning that's been done has perhaps opened their eyes up to actually this is an important part of the sector, that it doesn't work quite the same way as some other art forms, but it is as vitally important and obviously culturally, but also financially to the economy. It is something that this is a big part of this nation, and I'd like to think that there's been some recognition of things like grassroots music venues. Obviously there's been discussions of the grassroots sector within Parliament, which prior to this there wouldn't have been. So if there can be something positive that comes out of it, is that this sector suddenly actually has a voice, whereas perhaps it didn't before. And I think that if we can end up in a position that there's more financial support in the long run, the understanding will be there. But I think it is something that, because it hasn't perhaps been, and I don't want to say subsidised, but I think it's perhaps not had the financial support as other art forms may have done over the years, is that that's where the problems may have lay in the first place, is that people have had to have second jobs, which has then had a knock-on effect when suddenly the financial support that was given with like the furlough scheme or the self-employed support scheme is that actually people fell through the gaps, not through anything of their own fault, just because of the nature of the work they do. And as I say, is that yes, I was fortunate enough to have a basic income from working in a venue setup and be salaried, but as a promoter, when all my external work was based on the commission of shows and the success of shows, I've lost that for 12 months. So I have enough to pay the bills, but those who is their main source of income, and as I say, there's people who would have received most of their money via sort of touring work or through their live performances, who have received nothing or next to nothing, or ended up driving lorries for or making deliveries for supermarkets. A close friend who is a tour manager has been driving food deliveries for a supermarket because that's almost what he's fallen back on. Yeah. And hopefully we get to a point that people are going to be able to start working and earning, but I do worry that how many people may have given up hope of being able to earn a living out of what they're good at and they're passionate about.
And do you think going forward, when we eventually come out of things and life starts going back to normal, do you think there's going to be a shift in how the system works for the music industry in terms of the finances and stuff? Or do you think that those, especially those who are freelance in the industry, do you think that's just still going to have to be a part of the job? Like, that's just what you have to expect? Or do you think we could change that?
I think it could change. I think it'd be... Yeah. There's awareness, and I think that's the first step, is suddenly there's the evidence of how many people may have slipped through the gaps. And again, it's as bad and upsetting as it is. I don't think they can change what's being done at this point. I think that's because it's the way it's set up. But if we can come out of it and say, actually, this exists, these people exist, this is how it's done, how can we stop it if this happens again? That to me is, again, it's looking how we can improve everything going forwards.
Yeah.
And I think as an industry, the recognition of the grassroots sector as not being, let's say, the terminology that existed 5-10 years ago of the grassroots network was previously the toilet circuit. Through practice, it's changed to being the grassroots network and the sector. And it's that thing of changing terminology and even sort of like... grassroots venues, I think 5-10 years ago, may have even been considered as nuisance in the local community by certain aspects of it, and maybe even policing. It's like, oh, that's where there's going to be trouble because there's loads of people gathering. And but I think that has started to change in the last sort of 5-10 years, that because of the awareness of obviously charities like Music Venue Trust have put out there, saying actually, well, your Ed Sheeran's played at most of these venues.
Yeah.
So that's how important they are. And I think that's where, if that perception's changed, and the fact that there has been so much awareness around this sector, I think that's the first steps. And because funding has been given to support them, I think it gives a good position for us as a sector to be able to campaign, say, we need more support.
Definitely.
And it is looking at going, okay, what can be improved? How can we ensure that everything going forwards isn't just about being beneficial to people? It's got to be sustainable, and it can't just be handout after handout. But how can there be some more or closer sort of parity to other art forms? And if that is the case, then that will only have a knock-on effect to ensure that the artists and the crews are perhaps looked after from that network, so that suddenly there is that growth and support for future generations.
Absolutely, and it's about sustainability, like you say. It's about certainty and ensuring that no one in the music industry comes back after this wondering if this is a stable and secure route to take for a job. You know, nobody should have to go into this again wondering if this is going to happen again, if they're going to lose income, if they're going to lose work opportunities. So that kind of leads me on to my final question, which is that we've gone a whole year without festivals, without gigs, without independent venues being open. How do you think the live scene will change once things open up again? Do you think that musicians will still rely as heavily on playing live to bring in their income? Do you think they'll seek elsewhere? And what are you most looking forward to as well?
I'll start with what I'm looking forward to in terms of actually being back in a room watching live music, because I don't think in the last 15, 20 years I'd gone more than 10 days without watching a band. So suddenly to go 12 months without being standing in next to someone in a sweaty venue has been a strange experience. But to me, yeah, just getting back to doing that, and obviously it's watching and new incredible artists perform. In terms of going forwards, I think there's been a lot of sort of thought about how things are set up. I think a lot of the venues and promoters have perhaps restructured and reviewed how they do things to ensure that there's support there. And I think, again, artists have done the same. And having had numerous meetings with bands since the roadmap was announced, and having conversations about their plans post-lockdown, is actually to give them that second step, second restart. They had their opportunity before, when they first launched, they were a new band or whatever it may be, and people hadn't heard of them. They've actually now got an opportunity to relaunch themselves, but having already got that awareness out there. I think for them, it's going to be about, I say, being wise with what they do, so planning everything now. So going, well, actually, are there financial opportunities that they perhaps missed out on? So have they got everything, like their merch, set up properly? Have they got all their social medias in place and looking at that? Because as much as obviously recorded music isn't the income stream that it once was, is that they have to be looking at where live can support that. But also, if this scenario ever happened again, is that things like the streaming setup is now a lot more established than it was 12 months ago, and the quality of all of that is much, much better. So it may well be that artists are a lot more prepared to do different aspects of things. I think we've seen, when we were doing socially distant shows, a lot more artists were prepared to do matinee performances as well as an evening performance. So would it be that they do two shows in a day and earn more money, where they perhaps are going, well, actually, I'm not sure if I'd want to do that.
Yeah.
Then it becomes, obviously, can they do that? Is there the demand to do it? But to me, I think it's a lot more, exploring a lot more things. And I think just generally people are going to be more aware and receptive to go out and support things, because I think the response we've seen from ticket sales already since the roadmap announcement has been really strong. And obviously festivals have had that as well. People want to see live music. People want to get out there and support artists. And from doing that, it's just going to give that positive side of it. And if artists have then got their physical copies of albums or they've got their merchandise available at the shows, well, then they can capitalise on obviously selling more in that environment, say making the most of the opportunities that are going to be given to them, especially in those early stages, and then they can then sort of snowball from there.
Definitely. I think it's going to be so, so interesting. That first gig back is going to be amazing. We'll never forget it. We will never forget the first gig back.
Well, it's like that conversation of what was your first ever gig?
Yeah.
And everyone knows that. So it's almost like we're all going to have that, what was your first ever gig?
It's like a restart for all of us, not just the musicians, like you say.
Yeah.
I like the way of looking at it like that. I think that's a really positive spin on things, to be honest.
I think you have to be positive with it. You have to kind of look at what positives can be taken from a terrible, terrible situation that has obviously impacted so many in all different ways. But how can we come out of this in a positive aspect? What can we do to ensure that everything comes out of this stronger and in a more creative direction as well?
100%. I totally, totally agree. Well, Luke, thank you so much for joining me and for your time today. I really appreciate everything.
Not a problem at all.
To comment on. So. Big thank you to Luke Hinton for that inside perspective. And if you want to help Music Venue Trust on their mission to open every venue safely, visit musicvenuetrust.com, where you can make a donation to a specific venue or learn more about the importance of their work. As you may know, if you've listened to this podcast before, in the last few minutes I like to return to look at how everything we've discussed so far relates back to the music itself. To do that, we have our final playlist of this series, and I've done something a little bit different this week. Now, usually I would choose songs whose lyrics address the theme of the episode, but that didn't really feel right for this one. So rather than picking out a mix of artists who have sung about money or performing live, I thought we'd go and do one better. This playlist is entirely made up of live recordings from festivals, concerts, or intimate studio sessions. I like to think of this as a bit of a substitute for the real thing while we wait for gigs to return. I was sceptical of listening to live recordings for a long, long time. Just didn't really see the point of them. But now, having gone a whole year without live music, there's something really special about hearing the roar of the crowds, the riffing of an artist on stage. Just the energy of it all really shines through on a lot of these tracks. So, if you're missing big stadium tours with these massive artists, you will love the energy of Grounds for Divorce from Elbow's performance at Jodrell Bank in 2014, or the title track for this episode, Money for Nothing from Dire Straits, who are joined by the legendary Sting on this recording, I know, at none other than Live Aid back in 1985. Now, I love this song, and it really plays nicely into the theme of music being a business for this episode. The point of view of the lyrics paints rock stars as having a really easy time of it, basically playing a bit of a guitar, maybe getting a bit of a blister on the thumb, but essentially getting loads of money for no work, money for nothing. Meanwhile, the rest of us slave away doing real graft. Now, that was actually from a conversation that Mark Knopfler had with a colleague at a hardware delivery company before they made it big as a band, obviously. But yeah, it was a real conversation that they had. You can thank my dad for that little bit of trivia. Some of these tracks remind me of some amazing gigs that I've been lucky to go to in the past, like Coldplay or Wolf Alice or The Vaccines, while other ones are bands I'd love to see live or venues that I would really like to go and see. Tracks like Do Me a Favour from Arctic Monkeys and their performance at the Royal Albert Hall, I would love to go there and see them especially. Or Foals, and their recording of What Went Down is taken from when they played Glastonbury. Again, it's a band I've never seen and a festival that I've never been to. Can you believe that? Blasphemous, I know. Or if you prefer a more intimate setting for a gig, you'll like the recording of Somebody You Found by the Japanese House. This was recorded live in LA, and it brings across something really special that you get from a live performance. And that's maybe hearing a song stripped back a little bit more than the original recording. The same goes for the Bleachers track on this playlist. Now, their MTV Unplugged album from 2017 is possibly my favourite live album ever, because you really feel the connection between the band and the audience, and again, you get to hear some of their songs played in a very different way to the main records. And, of course, to finish it off, we couldn't leave it out now, could we? We end the playlist with Love on Top by Beyoncé, purely for the riffs she pulls off in this live performance. It's stunning. Absolutely stunning. Highly recommend that you go and listen to the Homecoming live album that this is taken from. If you listen, just sit there all the way through, close your eyes, and you can almost pretend that you're there. All you're missing is, of course, her. dance routine. I don't actually get so much energy, but her performances are just insane. Phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. So that takes us to the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I've been your host, Liv Cowell. And if you enjoyed this episode, please check out the Instagram accounts for this podcast, at The Here and Now Pod, for all the links to the playlists and previous episodes, as well as some extra little resources that I pop in there. Also, tell your lovely pals, and don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, because although I've been saying that this is the final episode of the series, I'm actually thrilled to announce that The Here and Now will return for a second season in the not-so-distant future. I'll be back for 6 more episodes with brand new guests and some fantastic new topics. So definitely, definitely keep an eye out on Instagram and Twitter, at Liv Cowell, for any sneaky previews that could be coming your way in the next few weeks. In the meantime, catch up on the previous episodes, immerse yourself in this week's playlists, you know, consider it your own little Here and Now festival, and join me next season on The Here and Now.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.